This week, the New York Times attempted to address its sharply declining revenue by introducing an occasional but prominent ad at the bottom of page one. To the purist, it's an intrusion, a violation of the choicest part of the gray lady's anatomy. To the realist, it's merely a reflection that in these troubled times, you sell what you got. And online speculation says an ad on the Sunday front page can go for $100,000. But this is hardly the first change to page one. When the Times began on September 18, 1851, it was called the New York Daily Times. There were no pictures or jumps, and the page was cluttered and crammed. But it's had countless facelifts over the years, clearly charted in the book, The New York Times, The Complete Front Pages. Times reporter James Barron contributed to the book, and he says one big change was the introduction of bylines, unheard of in the paper's first century. He says that after World War II, the paper promoted its star reporters on page one.
Did it make people try to do better writing? I think probably it did. The paper reads better now than it did before. There's a lot of stuff you have to wade through in some of those early papers, the words, not necessarily the story.
They are written so turgidly and with complete transcripts rather than summaries attached, so no context seemed to be provided within the individual stories, just a bunch of stuff.
I'm trying not to say that because 100 years from now, somebody will be sitting where you're sitting and they'll be looking at stories I wrote and saying the same thing. That's why I let you say that.
One thing I noticed on those early front pages are not only are the stories very, very long, but sometimes the headlines are, too. There's one about Teddy Roosevelt being shot, where you don't even need the story. The entire story is in the headline.
Well, and it has a point of view. October 15th, 1912, two-line headline all across the front page, and here's what it says. It says, "Maniac in Milwaukee shoots Colonel Roosevelt. He ignores wound, speaks an hour, goes to hospital." Well, you're right. That pretty much does it. And a little bit of editorial comment about the stability of the gunman.
The only thing that I learned from the story that, I'm sorry they didn't get to squeeze in the headline, was that the bullet was stopped by the text of Teddy Roosevelt's speech.
I do, yes. And a fine stem winder it was. It took an hour to deliver.
You really see the first draft of history. Can you point me to one or two front pages that would have been written differently with the benefit of hindsight?
Well, if we were doing the Gettysburg Address now, we would have led with what Lincoln said there. We led the paper that day with a story about the war. The headline was, "Important from East Tennessee." Under that was a subhead that said, "The Rebels Advancing Upon Knoxville." And then you got a story headlined, "The Heroes of July." This was the story about what happened at Gettysburg, and the lead on that story began like this. "The ceremonies attending the dedication of the National Cemetery commenced this morning by a grand military and civic display under command of Major General Couch." What Lincoln said was very short, and we printed it in its entirety midway down the front page, because Lincoln was basically an afterthought. The idea of what history remembers from that, this very short, eloquent, touching speech by Lincoln, the reporter on the scene didn't apparently see quite the significance of it, or under the conventions of the day, didn't shape the article around that.
You've also noted that when you look back at headlines, you really get to see the context for historic events. I think you noted March 21st, 1933. On the right side of the paper, you see an article explaining how Franklin Delano Roosevelt will get extraordinary new executive powers to address the economy.
That's right.
And then on the left side of the front page, what do you find?
Reichstag meeting today is prepared to give Hitler full control as dictator. It would have been fascinating to have been able to sit in on the page one meeting that day and see how they decided.
Sometimes you can foresee the significance of events, and sometimes you can't. But I think there were omissions that perhaps the paper needed to answer for. For instance, there was nothing on page one, at least while it was going on, about the Holocaust.
I know, and that's troubling. And I can't go back and ask the editors who were there then, what did you know and why, if you knew about it, why you didn't put this on the front page. It's just very troubling to me.
I think maybe we can learn something about the conventions of journalism by comparing two similar events, both covered by the Times, Lincoln's assassination and Kennedy's assassination. When Lincoln was assassinated, the word that was used on the front page was awful, awful news.
Yeah.
And the Kennedy assassination?
Was told much more factually, if you want to put it that way. Let me read that headline. It said, Kennedy is killed by sniper as he rides in car in Dallas. Johnson sworn in on plane. Well, the editorializing had gone over to the editorial page. The opinion about the event, the describing the event in the way awful news makes it sound, that was left for the editorial page. Tom Wicker, who wrote the story that day, it's an inverted pyramid story. President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was shot and killed by an assassin today, period. That's the lead.
There was a Pew study recently, and it found that for the first time, more people are getting their news online, something like 45% compared to newspapers, which is apparently 35%. I'm surprised it's that high. If people are getting their news from, say, the New York Times website, they don't get the full benefit, I guess, of the editor's notion of what ought to be front page news because they aren't seeing the front page. They're seeing something else.
Well, they get a different sense of it. Newspapers, if you think about it, are about setting priorities. That's what editors do by organizing the front page. That's a snapshot of a day. If you go to the homepage of nytimes.com, it's a snapshot of a much shorter period, but it's still determined by editors who go to the same meetings during the day as the editors who determine what goes on the front page of the print version. So what you get at the top of the homepage may be two or three stories. At 2 minutes of 3 o'clock or something, that's what's important at that point. It's a smaller window.
I see what you're saying, that there still is, you know, very strict editorial supervision of what goes on the homepage. But I have to say, as a reader, I read it differently. I don't pay as much attention to those stories that are being featured. I tend to go down to the sections that I want to more quickly, and I don't get to have the accidental encounter with those other stories that I might see if I were turning physical pages. So my experience of the paper is very different online, and the importance of those editorial decisions about what comes first is much diminished.
And I think that's one of the things that journalism is going to have to grapple with if the shift continues that the Pew study found.
You know, this week the New York Times joined other major U.S. papers by introducing a small ad at the bottom of the front page. Now, isn't this sacred real estate? What does this say about the state of the newspaper, or at least about the state of the front page of the newspaper?
What it says is a lot of other newspapers have tried that, and it's worked for them. They've found advertisers who want to be in that space because the front page gets attention for them.
Of course.
The same way it gets attention for stories.
Of course. No advertiser would turn down the front page. They just never had the opportunity to get on it before.
Well, no. Now, the Times did have short little ads, two or three lines of tiny type at the bottom of the front page until a few years ago. People would buy them to propose or to say happy birthday to somebody. For a while, I think there was a cable company that bought them.
Tiny, tiny three lines, just those little lost pieces at the bottoms of the columns,
and
hardly visible.
And this was different, but times are different now. Our readership has migrated to the web. These are hard times for newspapers. I can't think of any softer way to put it, and plenty harder that I can think of.
You know, do you think that this is some Rubicon that shouldn't have been crossed? Or as a employee of the Times, would you rather not be asked that question?
I'll take the fifth on this one, please.
James, thank you very much.
Thank you.
James Barron is a reporter at the New York Times and a contributor to the book, The New York Times, The Complete Front Pages, 1851 to 2008.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI, to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.